We're live.
Yes, sir.
April Fool. That ought to tell you we're live. If you got the same calendar I have, we are live. We were live last night, we're live tonight. And last night was a remarkable night in a terrible way. Reggie, who's been responsible, the pianist on Sunday, was so faithful to sort and run the messages on Live Festival, said after last night, "This is the first time in all the years that I have had this responsibility on a live festival that there were no commitments called in, no pledges called in for Secret 16, no flag on the map, no volunteer commitments. We're still at 146 going toward 300 that I've called for. And yet last night, I started something. You may find this strange, but I don't make it a practice to go back and look at the 20-year-old messages. I feel secure in the fact that I've preached the same message. But I seldom see those messages out of the archives unless I'm sitting here just before a live festival. But last night I decided to replay the trip we took through Nehemiah in 1977 and update it in relationship to the needs of the congregation today. And I was preaching pretty straight in 1977 to a congregation that weren't recognizing the challenge they had and the opportunity they had and how to get us as a church resurrected. I gave a little of the history last night, but in 1977 we were just commencing some of the terrible battles. We were in the middle of the tax battle. Not only was the church in debt on the brink of bankruptcy, owing $3.4 million on 30-day notes and having $19,000 cash. From the moment I arrived, new crises began to appear. The predecessors made a mistake. In 1970, before I came here, I came in 75, the tax laws of America changed. And up until 1970, churches were exempt from tax on unrelated business. In 1970, that changed. Now, I, with my dad, was pastoring Westcott Christian Center, and we immediately divested of any and all unrelated business and put them in separate tax-paying corporations. There's no way that I would have had a church apply to the government for a broadcast license. I would have created separate corporations, as we now have, Dolores Press, doing business as the University Network, and the church being the holy, or the only owner, and thus the corporation wholly owned, but separate from the church and taxpaying. But my predecessors took all the licenses as they pioneered religious broadcasting in the name of the church. And because they advertised on the FM radio station some spot ads for Algemax Restaurant, which was just down the street on Glendale, and a Christian, for quotes on that, car dealership in Orange County. I had no sooner arrived in town than the taxing agencies of the city argued that that advertisement of a unrelated business on the church's radio station removed the church's exemption. And they noticed me, that they were going to arrive on a certain day and seize the property, and that the church exemption had been nullified. And I told them over my dead body. And they were attempting to seize money on all sides, and there, those who were around in those days remember, I had withheld a certain amount of money from, I declared when I came that 25% of all the income in those days would be reserved to pay the debt. Even took 25% out of a Coke machine that was in the youth department. And I'd accumulated a sizable amount of money to pay the debt. And I had told every single trustor they would all be treated equally. We would operate as though the church were in bankruptcy until the debt were paid. And if they didn't like that, I'd put it in bankruptcy. Someone in our listening audience called and said that the tax collector had gotten a surreptitious lien to go and seize all the bank accounts. I beat him there for 5 minutes. Now, he thought I had cash in my little black bag that I carried around, but I had a cashier's check, emptying the accounts made out to Faith Center. I'm sitting here, and every news station in town had this bald-headed tax collector saying that somehow or other I'd beaten them to the bank, and if they could find the money, they'd get it. And I'm sitting there grinning and pounding my bag and saying, it's right here, but they ain't getting it. They were going to come at 10 o'clock on a certain day, and I said there'd be a communion table in front of the glass doors, and over my dead body they would come in. They backed down here, but they relayed to Hartford, and we're flying in a jet back and forth to Hartford, and we're boarded up in the studios in Hartford. And there they decided they were going to come and seize the property, piggybacking on the same removal of exemption. I remember it was a rainy, sleety day in Hartford. And we were boarded up in the studio, and I was broadcasting live almost 24 hours. We had, at one time, 85% of the listening audience in Massachusetts and Connecticut. And the day the sheriff was to arrive on Asylum Street, I'm in front of the communion table, and there must have been 3,000 people laying in the streets and the sidewalk in front of the studio, and the sheriff couldn't get through. So they went out and arrested a poor old diabetic transmitter operator for, first they went into Avon 14 miles away and filed a quick claim tax deed, claimed ownership of the property, then went to the transmitter and arrested the transmitter operator for first degree criminal trespass and violating scads of federal laws, turned the power off, including the blinking light on the tower. And in the mid-sentences, I'm making and the governor's mansion's phones were jammed, and I'm reciting the constitutional violations, and they pull me off in mid-sentence. Well, then they were negotiating with my attorneys that they'd turn it back on if I'd agree to quit bad-mouthing them on television. And I said, okay. But I knew that that was a violation of the Constitution, too, because that's negotiating as a government agency to suppress free speech. So as soon as they turned me on, I quit bad-mouthing them for the other thing. I began to teach them some constitutional lessons about the illegality of an agreement they tried to extort in violation of the constitutional rights of free speech. Prior restraint on free speech is prohibited. There were bitter fights. Needless to say, we won in Connecticut. And the tax bill of somewhere between $500,000 and $700,000 that began to accumulate with penalties in California, they ultimately had to eat. And there's still people working downtown that sort of tremble when my name comes across a piece of paper. They don't want this anymore. The Attorney General pursuing under a new agreement that churches were charitable trusts was going to take over and supervise without any crimes being committed. We defeated them, so they threw the ball to the FCC. Contrary to what a lot of people thought, we turned every record of the church in Volume 7 of that, which is on file at the FCC, every record of the church over. But where I drew the line was the names and addresses of the donors that they would not get. We were accused of not building a fountain of faith that we raised money for. We didn't raise money for it. We gave them a tape, proved that. We raised money to pay off a mortgage. We gave them a copy of the mortgage. We paid it off. Began to build the fountain of faith just out of operating. City of Glendale said it was a sign, and zoning would not allow another sign. We argued it was a work of art. We were in 6 months of litigation and won that. And it was deemed a work of art, and the Fountain of Faith was completed. And all the time, the FCC was trying to get the donors' records saying we hadn't built the Fountain of Faith. They offered to baptize them in it and dubbed them the bureaucratic monkeys of the century and the missing link that proved Darwin was right. These were terrible fights in those days. Faith Center, like wolves who attack or predators attack a herd of buffalo or sheep, they're going to go after what they think is the weak one. And when I came, Faith Center was on the rocks, and they were attempting to go after it. They lost. We're still here. We're still broadcasting. But in those days, we built the Fountain of Faith in blind faith. And I've always said, I discovered there was a balloon mortgage payment. That's what we raised the money for. It had to be paid in 30 days. I didn't know existed when I came here because I came in November and they hadn't kept record since May. Out of that context, church beaten down with no faith, old guard people by the definition of then, still sticking around wanting to run things and expecting some magic to deliver them, overpaid staff members, overpaid engineers, exploiters of the network, ignoring the church, and every religious pirate on the airwaves, including some of the worst, were buying the time on the network, and the church received $65,000 in donations in the year previous from the network, and everybody was showing off on television, and the congregation was in the dark. I came to restore honor to Faith Center, and God led me into the book of Nehemiah to arouse the congregation to faith. Now, today, Faith Center is strong. My wife is restoring everything over there as she's restored it here. And we took the larger challenge of going against the trend in the City of the Angels, the home where we have P.O. Box 1. I was challenged when the last great church downtown was going to sell out, the Church of the Open Door. And we took the challenge of moving, not our church, we're right here in Glendale, and our sanctuary, as I just said, my wife's restoring every part of that. We've been going back for Shalom services. And Faith Center is still large and blatant is the sign out front. And we now cover the world with our broadcast. But that really exploded when we took the challenge to go downtown. The devil fought us in every way. The worst thing that happened is I was suddenly preaching from a pulpit, the deed of which and the property we're buying had not been disclosed to me, that if anyone ever preached a message from that pulpit other than fundamentalism, since fundamentalism started in that church, the property would revert back to the original donors and their heirs. Now, some people wouldn't care about that, but I get angry when I go across the Middle East and see mosques repainted with Christian pictures and turned into a church, and vice versa. Churches being replaced by a mosque, put in the same category of what a dog does on a bush. I respect people's religion, even if I disagree with them. There's enough land on this earth to not have to take somebody else's place of devotion and stamp a new adverse to the original position name on it. So I was caught in betwixt and between, even though modern law might have challenged the cloud on the deed. You could build a high rise there, but you couldn't have a church where you're preaching something contrary to fundamentalism. And I'm talking about the rigid fundamentalism, the inerrant word of God, the King James. It started in the Church of the Open Door, so I had difficulty early on. Earthquake finished the job. I still felt God had challenged us to do what every other Protestant church had reversed. They had left the heart of the city. And that we, in this, the home base of our ministry, we would take the challenge. Like Jerusalem embraces God's name in its roots. The city of the angels is an embryo of the whole earth with the mixture of races and religions here. The city of the angels has been the home base of religious movements, including not only fundamentalism, but the Pentecostal movement at Azusa Street. I felt God would have us take the challenge to maintain a presence in the heart of the city. We've been several years doing that. And I have sensed that the congregation is much like the first congregation I began to pastor at Faith Center. Not taking the challenge. Where there's no vision, the people perish. And I decided to replay these messages and sit here and comment on them and draw relationship to the current need and see if I can continue waking up our current congregation, and particularly the church within a church that I'm aiming for, 300 volunteers that will give 12 hours a week. 300 that will involve themselves with Secret 16. 700 that give 3,000 by Christmas. 300 people that will get KU bands until, like old Channel 30, you always have access. The big dishes will be a thing of the past eventually. The digital TV is the move of the future. And so we have taken the step of faith, and Faith Center now has become an antenna farm as we built a second uplink. The mobile units are there. And from Faith Center, as the Fountain of Faith says, we will broadcast till Jesus comes the water of the Word to wash this whole globe. But as Nehemiah had a heart toward God at Jerusalem, a particular place, I agonized and prayed and felt that this message that we proclaimed deserved a platform that, as symbols through the whole Bible, speak emotionally, speak intuitively, embody in things a larger vision. I felt that we needed a platform large enough to justify and say to God, this is what we think of the message that's going out. Grand enough to somehow honor the message that's going. And I asked you almost 2 years ago this Christmas, will you help me take this mountain using Caleb as the example? And we paid cash and bought the cathedral. And now I'm looking for men with a heart toward God and women with a heart toward God that will do what the congregation did when we restored Faith Center. Move on. In faith, grab the territory. In faith, make the testimony. In faith, make the commitment and bear God's burden while He carries yours. So I'm going to take us tonight to the second of those messages. You didn't call much last night when we went to music, and I asked you to. You better do different tonight. I expect at least to go up to the 150 mark, halfway to the 300, who commit themselves as volunteers 12 hours a week. But I want to take us back to 1977. And again, I can't guarantee the quality of the picture because I haven't looked at it. I only listened to a tape. But we're going to tune in shortly after I introduce the message. And I'll interrupt the message. We'll be live here because I want to interrupt it when it needs to be related to the current situation. I hope you'll pull a chair up and sit there and listen. And maybe God's Word will kindle a new, fresh flame and return you to the first love of this great challenge of being the foundation for a voice that reaches the whole world. Now, listen as we go back to 1977.
Faith Center. Faith Broadcasting Network. By any other name, it could fail without as broad a repercussions. But when that name went up on the masthead, God's honor is at stake. And today I want you to write some words in the margin, because as we look at Nehemiah, I'm not as interested in preaching sermons per se, if I ever am, and I don't think I ever am. But particularly in this book, I want truths to take root. All Scripture is written for our instruction and example, but no place in Scripture fits Faith Center's current circumstance and can guide us better than Nehemiah. So I'm going to give you some words in an old Keswick tradition to hang your thoughts on in this chapter. I want us briefly to look again at what the primary subject was last Sunday, the burden that Nehemiah carried. And then I want us to look at the blessing that he coveted. And then I want to talk about the blight that he surveyed. I don't do this often, but it will enable you to hang thoughts on mental pegs along the side of your mind. And then fourthly, the building that he inspired or initiated. And fifth, the battle that he caused. The burden that he carried. Jeremiah has a passage where Jeremiah says that a day might come when God will speak of the burden of the Lord. And we say, what burden? As though we're caught by surprise with it, as though the subject of the burden of the Lord causes us to stop and have to ask ourselves, what is the burden? And in that day, Jeremiah says, God will lift His blessing. Lots of people think they have a burden for the Lord. What they really have is a burden for the Lord to do for them. And there's a difference. The burden of the Lord tunes in on the burden the Lord is carrying. And the burden of the Lord is not transferring my burden to Him. He tells me to do that, that's all right. But that's not the burden of the Lord. He says, cast your cares on Him, for He careth for you. Literally, your care is His constant concern. Psalm 37 tells us in the literal, it's out of camel driver's language. You literally take your burden, your way, the problems of your life, and you roll them off onto God the way a burden bearer rolls it onto a camel. He is our burden bearer, but again we have these paradoxical laws of the Spirit. And as they work horizontally, they work vertically. We win spiritual battles praying for one another. The other side of the coin is that as the Lord wants us to cast our cares on Him and He carries them, He wants us, having been set free from that care, to pick up His burden. Nehemiah only had to hear, as we saw last Sunday, he only had to hear from his brother who returned from Jerusalem in December the condition of Jerusalem to cause him to begin to weep and fast and to carry that burden for 4 months until in April, the month of Nisan, as you read in the second chapter, chapter 1, 4 months later, he comes into the presence of the king as his cupbearer, and the king says, "Why is thy countenance sad, seeing thou art not sick?" This is nothing else but sorrow of heart. 4 months he carried a burden for God's work thousands of miles away from that capital city of Artaxerxes, where he served as cupbearer to the king. I can't put this on anybody. Only people that care for the Lord can take this burden. But I repeat what I said last Sunday. There's one reason why I am in Faith Center. I'm here because God's honor is at stake. Because the work of God will suffer. And in the battles that we have been...
I want you to go right back to the work of God will suffer. And I want to bring this fast forward to now. We solved Faith Center's problems. Why didn't we stay there? Well, one of the reasons, it was packed out. And we reached a stage where there wasn't room. But that wasn't the reason. We could have multiple services. I, while we were rescuing Faith Center, saw the heart of Los Angeles. I don't think this is an accident. The City of the Angels is its name. Now, I've studied the workings of Satan for years. When the prophecy about Lucifer being in Eden before his fall is unfolded in Isaiah and Ezekiel, the prophecy first is directed to the king of Tyre, an earthly king, but then quickly it segues into the real ruler of Tyre, Satan. When Gabriel came to answer Daniel's prayer and told Daniel that he had heard his prayer weeks earlier but was restrained by the prince of Persia, he didn't mean the earthly king. He made that clear when he said he was only able to break free to deliver the message when Michael, the chief of princes, came to help him fight against the prince of Persia. I began to introduce Sunday in the current Roman series the apocryphal literature and that which is incorporated into the New Testament by the quotations in Jude, who build on Paul, by the way, of Satan claiming the body of Moses. As I'm going through the 25th and 6th verses of the third chapter, where God is now making the point, "I told you so, I was always just and righteous in forgiving those that had committed sins and not killing them instantly because I had in my plan the price of their redemption." Satan was always the accuser, up there accusing Job, And he will stay there till Michael casts him out, as described in the book of Revelation, about midway through the tribulation, and he's barred from the heavenlies and restricted just to the earth. But because of Adam's fall, he's the boss down here. I've studied revivals. There are cities that are open to God. Dallas is one of them. One of the reasons I credit First Baptist Church in Dallas, they stayed downtown. And that great church with some of the greatest preachers in the history of America, I remember inviting W.A. Criswell as the guest when I led the dedication services for the headquarters church, Central Assembly in Springfield, Missouri. Chicago's always been open to revival. I credit Moody Bible Institute, Ari Torrey, and those who seized the heart of that city. New England brought revival to America, but quickly Satan moved in, and it's become the place noted as the burial ground of evangelists. And just read all the books that you will about witchcraft and demonology and poltergeist. New England became, not just in climatology and spirituality, a place without spiritual life, as Satan was allowed to move in to a degree beyond other places in America. Los Angeles has been, as I said, a place of spiritual openness. I credit the fact that great Protestant churches, starting with the Church of the Open Door, dominated the heart of the city. I didn't speak idly when I began to express my grief to Tom Bradley that if all of the spiritual life went out of the heart of the city, something would happen to Los Angeles, that the whole city would deteriorate accordingly. I absolutely and totally believe we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against these principalities, including Archos, who are assigned territories like the Prince of Persia and the Prince of Tyre and the Prince of Greece. There are lots of ministries that love to deal at a distance, but you can't find their home base vital. And I was troubled in spirit, and I called Tom Bradley. And here we had solved the problem of Faith Center, but on the fringe of this great city of the angels. That was a name that must have aggravated the devil. And I've constantly given credit to the Catholics for staying downtown. All the Protestant churches left, and the speech was the same. They gave it to me at the Church of the Open Door. Expenses, downtown property is too expensive to have a church, and parking. You can't have a church when you can sell a piece of property for bare land for $20 or $30 million. You can't have a church when the land under it is worth more than the building that's on it. So the heart of the city became a city of finance and real estate investment and Japanese investment and industrialization. And one of these days somebody's going to build a football stadium down there. And we're just blocks away from Staples Center, and they fight to try to seize from us the parking spaces that we now have. I had the vision. I tried. I even offered to give a monthly stipend to the Church of the Open Door if they'd stay there before they came back and asked us to buy it. And while I'm complaining about everybody leaving, in my spirit, I didn't hear anything out of the wall or the sky. Well, Lord, send me. And I asked you to follow me, and it was a fight. And it seemed, and some of you never recovered from the loss of the Hope Street Church, Church of the Open Door. God gave us a better place. We have taken the challenge. No, Satan, you won't own a city that has driven your clutches out and has made a city more open to spirituality, including some weird ones. The City of the Angels, that very name, and our home metropolitan area, we will seize a place in the heart of the city and the whole world, including the prince of the power of the air, 24 hours a day, and every Lord's Day will know we're there. And we're not just a worldwide ministry. We're a lighthouse from the city of the angels, an embryo of the world that is telling the gospel message to the world. I went because I had a burden. Is it any different? The only difference is, with Faith Center, we were restoring something that was on the brink of destruction. Downtown, we're moving ahead with a vision, but like those who went with a vision to rebuild at Jerusalem, a lot of you have parked. And now the burden that you have is that the Lord will carry your burden, and you've stopped having His burden. Well, I don't want you to have to say what burden. I'm telling you, for this church, our burden is to finish what we started, to shore up what we have, and to make the devil more mad when he come to May this year, because he understands whatever he does, we're going to win. Now listen to this message in that context.
Because the work of God will suffer. And in the battles that we have been fighting to resurrect Faith Center to strength, it doesn't really matter. Legally, in the dealing with carnal governmental officials, I have had to strictly disassociate as a causal force for some of the problems in order to give me the freedom to not be encumbered with any governmental agencies that slow the curative process. But it doesn't really matter in the spiritual frame who did what. Forgetting those things which are past, we press toward the mark. Every one of
them. See here, come back to press toward the mark. Here, I'm dealing with the fact. In my judgment, as I said last night, they made a mistake borrowing money in the first place for the Lord's work. Their bigger mistake was getting their broadcast licenses in the church's name instead of creating a separate entity. And I've clearly stated in the way it is of faith the mistakes that were made and what we were going to do to try to move on. But the blame game, we're 2 years into and didn't need to do it anymore. I'm telling them, let's go. It's time to move on. That's where we are in this message. Go back to it.
Things which are past, we press toward the mark. Every one of us come under the burden. There is a scar on the church. Faith Center was stumbling, about to collapse. God's whole church would suffer. We mouth. I listen to people mouth love. I listen to people mouth spirituality. I listen to people hunt and peck those definitions of spirituality that they find easy to do. And as I've said, Jesus said, if you do good to those, do good to you. What's so special about that? That's Moffat's translation. Did God's word say it or did it not? If one member suffer, all suffer. Now, I don't want to throw stones. I'd rather stay on the positive. Whether anyone else picks up this burden or not, those that do recognize it is God's church that was stumbling. Sickness of leadership, faltering steps, varieties of causes. Faith Center was about to collapse. When one member suffers, all suffer. And those that have caught the burden without throwing stones to anybody that hasn't, you're in Nehemiah's camp. You have caught the vision that it's God who will get the glory and it's His church that will suffer. It's God that will get the glory if the church raises up strong again. It's His church, all of it, that will suffer if a sinner were allowed to stay a crumbled wreck like the walls of Jerusalem.
You know, when I fought the battle against government encroachment on churches with the charitable trust law, my staff member, a retired Nazarene elder, sat in Senator Petras' office, and I fed him as we helped change the law in California to make it clear and in the law that churches are not charitable trusts under the supervision of the Attorney General. If they do something wrong, they have no more exemption than any other criminal. But the charitable trust interpretation of California was treating churches as just a department of the Attorney General. Only he could stand in for them, and the beneficiaries were as wide as the population of the state, and it was part of a move to stop money from going out of the state that charitable trusts were sending, which would have blocked any church from making a contribution to a missionary that was not a part of its own organization. The rest of the church world just was sleeping while it was happening. And we fought that battle and won in California. Same with the city of Los Angeles. The power of Los Angeles is the city council and the county supervisors and the chief of police and the mayor of Los Angeles. All the suburbs are still part of Los Angeles County. What flows out of the mind of the governance of that city is going to affect every church in the whole Los Angeles basin and affect us on the fringes if we stayed only in Glendale. Just as Nehemiah recognized the importance of Jerusalem, and just as Nehemiah recognized, I recognized when it came to Faith Center, that if that church went down, and if the charitable trust law, as it was being exercised, were carried out, every church in America would then come under government supervision. Not government action when a church does something wrong. Supervision. Preventive. Open access. No privacy. Members of the church no longer the beneficiaries of their church. I fought it alone. I would have survived any government intrusion better than anybody. And thanklessly, we fought for all churches because of the conviction that I have that the price of freedom is association with nuts. You will see, I've said many times, Antichrist cannot come to power anywhere in this world until the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution is abrogated. If you were to take a vote in America today, they'd vote it out. It doesn't protect the majority, it protects the minority. And the war on drugs has failed. The drug cartels have won. If anything, they've gotten stronger. The war on terrorism, same thing. The only thing that we lose is civil rights. And we're losing them by the day. They have to go before Antichrist can come, but the church has a twofold mission: to preach the gospel and resist Antichrist, because he cannot come to power until the church is taken out. Now, it doesn't matter whether anybody else cares or not, God cares. And he has to find a man or a group that will care what he cares. Unless someone, and that's why I finally had to face it, why not you? Unless someone stems the tide and seizes a part of the heart of the city, saying enough already, the city will go totally secular and religion will be on the fringe. You've listened to the mayors. They didn't come to the church at Glendale. Mayor of Glendale might. We saved the downtown library along with the rest of the members of the committee. We reached 8 million, but they couldn't go to the 10 million until we took them the other two. And I don't need to recite others. What we're doing is important to every church. This city is the most important city in the world, will one day surpass New York, It is a, I've said it three times tonight, an embryo of the problems of the world. Every race, every language, every culture. Tom Bradley's the last mayor able to weld all those diverse elements together. We went down saying we're not only preaching to the world, we are going to keep our home base as secure as God will enable us to do it. We care. It's God's burden, and every church would have suffered if Faith Center had gone down. Every church would be suffering untold intrusions if Faith Center hadn't won the battle on the charitable trust battle. Every church that is on radio or television for even one 30-second spot would be under the control of the National Labor Relations Board and would have to go before a state agency if they fired an organ player because they had a theological reason that he couldn't be gay and be on their platform. Unless somebody thinks, because I'm courteous to a guest, that I believe in gay marriage, let me tell you, I don't think God was so dumb that if that's what he wanted, he couldn't have said, it's not good for Adam to be alone, so let's create another man. Now, I'm still with that right-wing guy. Not too often am I with the right-wing people, but the last time that I checked any medical records, the muscles of that excrement part of your body are designed to send things out, not take things in. So let nobody be mistaken. Gays are welcome in my church. I am not their judge, but I'm not for gay marriage. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
Because some of you judgmental stoops out there can't tell the difference between courtesy and concurrence. I think I said I'm a lesbian. The only person I want to marry is that which stimulates my lesbian desires. I like women, not men. And I begin to detect some people who think, where does he stand on that? You're an idiot. But you can't figure out where I stand on that. But I don't have to agree with a friend to be his friend. And I have no political axe to grind. I don't need their vote. They can come to my church anytime they want to. But don't ask me to marry you if you're homo. And don't ask me to marry you if you're a lesbian until you can explain what I've already preached on in Romans 1. But I think lying and all those other sins are equally bad. And what I'm saying to those that are gay, you come to the church and you start practicing faith and you become a new creature in Christ Jesus, the Holy Spirit might change some of your desires to conform to His will. In contrast to turning you over to yourself, which is what Romans 1:18 talks about. I have not the slightest problem with some kind of civil contract that gives to them the rights of a married companion before the courts. I mean, in my case, I have no family. Until I married, I had to find someone that had power over me if I checked into a hospital before they'd let me go in there. Someone with the power to decide whether to turn the switches off or on. There are certain civil rights that marriage, which is a holy sacrament, does not even give you until it is memorialized in records and filed with the state to guarantee you the civil state rights of a union as distinct from the sacrament of marriage, what God joins together. So I have any trouble with civil contracts. And I have no trouble with the state recognizing equal rights among companions, though they make a choice other than mine. Don't call it marriage. Not a sacrament. If you don't agree with that, even my friends have a right to be wrong. That's for the few idiots in my congregation that are sitting out there, and that's been one of the problems of some of you. You think you've been around long enough to judge the pastor. He that judgeth me is the Lord. And I'm on his side, and I know what he says in Romans 1. And he hasn't changed it in 2,000 years. He doesn't like liars. And I'd rather fellowship, though I don't agree with making it a sacrament, I'd rather fellowship with a married homosexual couple than with a Christian liar. Put away lying. Now, fellowship with just about anything over hypocrites and liars. And judgmental asteroids. Now, I didn't say it quite that blunt 19 years ago, or however, 1977 is. But I thought I'd weave that in. And what we're doing when we go downtown is to make sure that the devil knows he doesn't own the city of the angels as long as we're here. Now, get going with that message.
We're allowed to stay a crumbled wreck like the walls of Jerusalem. I talked about his burden at length last Sunday. I just want to select some things in this chapter. It came to pass in April in the 20th year of Artaxerxes, the king, that wine was before him, and I took up the wine and gave it unto the king. Now, I have not been beforetime sad in his presence. Now, some people can only get a burden for the Lord when they're at an altar. Some people's definitions of spirituality are limited to certain kinds of expressions in the church. I want you to notice where his burden brought him the opportunity to be God's instrument. He was in his ordinary, everyday task of taking up the wine to the king. And that became the opportunity for him to be the instrument of deliverance. The king said, "Why are you sad?" Then I was very sore afraid. Again, I want to point out en route, having the burden of the Lord and becoming an instrument of the Lord doesn't make such a super spiritual, otherworldly being out of you that you don't have the same kind of reactions you and I have. I've been scared plenty of times since I've been here. What time I'm afraid, I will trust in the Lord. Just as Nehemiah. You're going to learn the balanced naturalness of spirituality in this book. So I prayed to the God of heaven. Now, I don't really think that Nehemiah stood in front of the greatest king of that day, Artaxerxes, and standing there showed off his spirituality and turned his back to the king holding wine and said, "Oh, God, help me. Now, king, will you give me this?" I have an idea that he prayed a secret prayer. But the moment that the fear came upon him and the opportunity was there, he had wept and fasted with a burden for 4 months. Now the king zeroes in, says, "What's the matter with you?" So I prayed to God of heaven. I can just hear him. Because death could come instantly if he received disapproval from the king in that moment. He must have whispered, "Oh, Lord, here it is. Help me now." Then I said to the king, "If it please the king, and if thy servant have found favor in thy sight, that thou wouldest send me." The burden of the Lord, when it comes on you, will make you available. Send me. And that's where we ended last Sunday. He made himself available. Send me unto Judah, unto the city of my father's sepulchres. And circle a word here. That I may build it. I've read this chapter probably 20 times. But only recently did it leap out in that fifth verse. How many of you remember me telling a story about a chaplain? When I was 16, he was in Patton's Third Army that I listened to. I listened to the chaplain preach at St. Helena. He was speaking to youth in a camp, and I was sitting there. How many of you remember that story? There's enough of you, I can tell it again. He said he used to get angry when he'd get newspapers from home and would read Patton's Third Army moved ahead so many miles. He said the impression left by the story was the army just sort of was picked up like some amorphous mass and moved ahead and set out. He said, I didn't know what happened. One guy got the word move. If he asked himself before he moved, well, what about the guy on the right? Or what about the guy on the left? Or will the shells be on target? Or the planes on time? He never would have moved. He had to move as though the entire battle depended upon him. Well, you've got the application. When I was 16, but I made a decision. And to the best of my ability, like Paul, I can say I've been faithful to it. I decided as a 16-year-old boy, if I believed in something, I would commit myself to it as though the entire battle depended upon me. That's what God needs. Nehemiah doesn't say, send me that I may get somebody to help me build it. Now put it into the flesh and blood world, that I may build it. He had never built a wall in his life, I'm sure. But here he is bearing a cup of wine to the king, and the king says, why are you so sad? He prayed and fasted for 4 months carrying the burden of the Lord. It didn't wear out with time. God's honor was at stake. Now the chance comes to speak. He says, I'm sure, oh God, privately help me. And I spake to the king, will you send me that I may build it? God, give me the ability to communicate the reasons why God works with men like Nehemiah. King said unto me, how long will the journey be? When are you going to get back? Please the king to send me, and I set him a time. Now, I don't know how much time he set him. You'll read in later chapters that he spent 12 years. He got his foot in the door. I like this practical guy. King hadn't shot him yet, or hit him, or whatever they did to him in those days. Moreover, he had been priming the pump for 4 months. He says, send me. And the king was, instead of killing him on the spot, said, give me a time. When are you going to get back? He gave him a time. Moreover, I said unto the king, if it please the king, let letters be given me to the governors beyond the river, that they may convey me over till I come unto Judah. And a letter unto Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest. Now, some people have thought that was a forest way up in Lebanon. He didn't go up to Lebanon and get any timber. There must have been some grove of trees kept near this city of Jerusalem, tended by a man named Asaph, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the palace, which appertain to the house and for the wall of the city and for the house that I shall enter into. And the king granted me. Now watch this spirit of this man, because these become the ingredients in the makeup of the people that God will use to deliver faith center completely. The king granted me. Boy, I must stand in good with him. Hoop-dee-doo-dah. My months of service have really paid off. I must be really something. The king's done it for me. And I can march into that city and say, hoopity-doo-dah, not just hoop-de-doo-dah, hoopity-doo-dah. I'm coming from the king. He gave it to me. What does it say? And the king granted me according to the good hand of my God upon me. Do I need to interpret that? The tax battle is going the way it should go, according to the good hand of our God, which is upon us. The budget will reach the boundaries we're asking for, and the debt will be paid, according to the good hand of our God, which is upon us. Then I came to the governors beyond the river and gave them the king's letters. Now the king had sent captains of the army and horsemen with me. That's enough to split the buttons off your vest. When Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the servant, the Ammonite, Sanballat ruled Samaria. Tobiah was apparently a servant that had been exalted as a chief advisor in the area. You're going to hear a lot about these guys, plus one more Arab that will come on the scene in a short time. But when these two heard of it, it grieved them exceedingly. And here underlined, and this states the burden that he carried. As we came to the verse, "Send me," last Sunday, listen to this. It grieved them exceedingly that there was come, underline it, a man to seek the welfare of the children of Israel. Now, Israel...
Come to me. Now, go back to that again. A man that seeks the welfare of the children of Israel. You know, the film commission downtown, taking quite a while, it grieved them considerably that now powerful figures in this city who appreciate what we're doing tell them that they better notice our attorney before they have a parade within 5 blocks of the cathedral that would affect our time. Well, now, they push the envelope, and every so often a new person is appointed, and they go a different direction. It grieved a lot of people considerably. Now, I remember my grief as I would drive down 110 and see those Jesus Saved signs laying in the graveyard for signs just before you go under the Interstate 5, driving toward the city on the left side of the road, those Jesus Saved signs laying in disrepair for everybody to see as a pile of junk alongside 110 freeway. It grieved me. It ate at me. And I formed a corporation called the Religious Cultural Commission of the City and County of Los Angeles. And I sued the people that were building on the old site. And I sued them for my famous God figures. They asked for a meeting, and I said, "I cannot win this lawsuit ultimately, but you'll be 5, 10, 15 years, because I'll spend the money to take you to the Supreme Court or as far as the courts will let us go. You won't build this high-rise until this matter is resolved. And you can't sue me if I lose for malicious prosecution, because the state statute declares that every citizen of California has a duty to protect the environment. And I've examined your report that you filed with the CRA, your so-called environmental report, and there wasn't one single part of it that asked a question, what's going to be the impact on the religious environment of this city and what you're doing removing this famous landmark. Well, what are you... I can't win it, I said, but there ain't no way I'm going to stop fighting it. Well, what do you want? I want those signs restored, and I want you to put them up on our new building. They're there. It grieved a lot of people. It grieves Cal Am, because I'm always bellyaching that they shut the routes off. It grieves various departments of the city until they figure out we won't stop. We get notices now. Not always. And I get up and grab some more, and I have established relationships that we can call people that they normally wouldn't take their call. I don't talk to their secretary. A lot of you do not even realize, because I haven't tooted the horn so much, what we are doing. There's a lot of people grieved because we have staked a claim downtown. A lot of movie people are grieved because they can't park their trucks. They got to get them out of there by 6 o'clock Saturday night. A lot of people are grieved because they were filming not too long ago on a building next to us, and the police told them they couldn't fire off any of those blank shots from 11 to 1. A lot of people are grieved because the alley belongs to us every Saturday night until Sunday afternoon. A lot of people that thought they were rid of religious interference with their taking the city over on the weekends and the rest of the week are grieved. And the famous words of my dad, whom I played Sunday night ago, good enough for them. Good enough for them. A lot of people were grieved when we got that cross elevated again on Hollywood Freeway. A lot of people were grieved when there were only three clergymen on that prestigious committee, Rebuild LA. 50 of the leaders of the whole Los Angeles basin, only three clergymen. A prominent Jewish rabbi, Cardinal Mahoney, and Dr. Gene Scott. That grieved a lot of people. That wouldn't have happened. We wouldn't have had that relationship if we hadn't seized. And as Mayor Bradley says, we'd let nothing stop us. If we couldn't do it in one place, we'll do it in another. We will not let the devil have our home metropolitan area. We cannot have that influence in the suburb. We still are in the suburb. The library telethon was conducted in this studio. It was the Los Angeles Central Library. I think some of you have grown dull and have ceased to understand what you are accomplishing when you fill that seat on Sunday morning at the cathedral. There hasn't been a reservation come in yet tonight because I shut the phones off. But when I turn the phones on, you better make reservations if you haven't. There hasn't been a single addition to the volunteers of the 300 I'm seeking because I've got the phone shut off. But when I go to music and turn the phones on, you better be calling. But let's continue with this message. Go on.
And he carried. He came to seek the welfare of God's people. To every one of us in leadership, daily, we have to examine motives. I can fool you. I can't fool me, and I can't fool God. And as this church continues to grow, and it's the problem of every old church, there are those that come into positions and they want the positions. The issue is whether or not we get a Sanballat and a Tobiah attitude that like our position until someone that comes along truly seeking the welfare of God's people becomes a threat to their position. God builds His work on people that seek the welfare of the children.
There isn't anybody downtown. All these commercial ventures, all of these various movie shoots, they're not down there seeking the welfare of this city and the welfare of God's people. They wish God's people go away. They're down there to make money. They're down there for their welfare. That's why I said we're not a mission. We support charitable activities all over the city. We are there to make a statement. God's people have not left the city of the angels at its heart. And we're there to seek the welfare of all God's people that will benefit from our determination to gain respect for the people of God in the heart of the city. Go back to the message.
God builds His work on people that seek the welfare of the children of God. I fool you for a time, but not for very long. You know whether you're cared for by those that lead you. So I came to Jerusalem, marching in all my glory with button, pop, and pride. I got the king's men with me. My pockets are full of papers. Line up, all you people. I've come to deliver you now. Fill the newspaper with noise, hip, hip, hooray. Get all ready. All I'm going to have to do is touch this wall, and it's going to come up. Anybody got that in their chapter? So I came to Jerusalem, was there 3 days. And I talked about how great a deliverer I'm going to be for you the whole time I was there. Anybody got that in their book? You've got a temple built already, folks. There's an altar in that temple. I sent runners ahead of me. I'm there 3 days. Let's fill this 1,500-seat temple full. Your deliverer has come, one Nehemiah. You know, none of that's in my Bible either. My Bible, as they say, in some areas of the United Kingdom. So I came to Jerusalem and was there 3 days. And I arose in the night, I and some few men with me. Neither told I any man what my God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem. You know, that's enough to give a Madison Avenue promotional PR man of the preacher of the day a nervous breakdown. Come into town and start a revival like that. No drums beating, no ads on display, no local organizational committee beating up the enthusiasm, nobody telling them in advance how great Nehemiah is. That violates every rule I know of, evangelism. He came carrying a burden. He came covenanting a blessing. The blessing he wanted. You know what it was? The opportunity to build. That's the blessing he wanted. The chance to build. Give him what means you can. But give me a chance to build it. I may build it. That's the blessing he wanted, to be a part of the building. I got people in this church that want blessings. Every church has. What they really mean is they want to be made to feel good. They want an opportunity to show off. They want a spiritual image. They want a lot of things other than the opportunity.
Yeah. You know, when we finish this series, and I'm going to keep going because it's so applicable, my wife came up with a title for it, Scott on Scott. And it says, Scott on Scott. That's what we're asking you to seek as a blessing. The 300 volunteers, to be able to look back like those who built the Fountain of Faith or made it possible and say, I was there. I want the opportunity to help you rejuvenate this church and finish taking the mountain and shoring up everything that God has given us thus far. I want the blessing of being able to participate sacrificially in the burden that you're carrying. Go back to the message.
What they really mean is they want to be made to feel good. They want an opportunity to show off. They want a spiritual image. They want a lot of things other than the opportunity to be an instrument of building. There are other churches that haven't got any tumble-down walls. They not only got the walls built, they got a rocket launcher and a satellite to ride in. But here, we got a wall to build. And God give us a people that covet this blessing, that want the opportunity to be in the remnant, that over here in the fourth chapter will be named, that want to build this wall for the glory of God, that are willing to say, God, let me do it. Send me that I may build it. Give me a hammer. Give me a shovel. I rose in the night, and some few men with me. I don't look like much of a deliverer. He can't even get a crowd first night of the meeting. Neither told I any man what God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem. I like that. I don't believe in telling the devil what I'm going to preach about before I get up there. Neither was there any beast with me. He didn't even have much equipment, save the beast that I rode upon. And I went out by night by the gate of the valley, even before the dragon wall, into the dung fort, and viewed the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down. And the gates thereof were consumed with fire. Then I went on to the gate of the fountain and to the king's pool. But there was no place for the beast that was under me to pass. The rubbish, not only were the walls down, the rubbish was so bad, he couldn't even get through it. This is God's work, folks. I'm going slow on it because there is a difference between a morbid beating of yourself to death.
Yeah, I don't want to go to the cathedral because Caltrans every Sunday seem to close one of the exits. Or there's some traffic jam with some film crew and our tax dollars spent with cops sitting there feeling glorious because they are able to look at Hollywood people. I don't want to go downtown where on Broadway all those people are crowding around. That's why every other Protestant church left. And by the way, the Catholics moved uptown. They didn't move downtown. They left the historic cathedral and went uptown. We're downtown, in the heart of the city. There are more people on Broadway than any street in the Los Angeles County on Sunday, every Sunday. We're downtown. You don't even have to look for parking. You don't have to worry about your beast not making it through. You just pull into the parking lot and park your horsepower and walk across the street. Get with it, folks. Get on with this message.
The rubbish, not only were the walls down, the rubbish was so bad, he couldn't even get through it. This is God's work, folks. I'm going slow on it because there is a difference between a morbid beating of yourself to death because of the problem and a realistic appraisal of it. He spent 3 days surveying the blight, and it was awful. The rubbish was so bad he couldn't even pass. Then went I up in the night with a brook and viewed the wall and turned back and entered by the gate of the valley and so returned. And the rulers knew not whither I went or what I did, neither had I as yet told it to the Jews, nor to the priests, nor to the nobles, nor to the rulers, nor to the rest that did the work. 3 days while he surveyed the blight. Believe me, I know. I spent 2 days in Willard Cantlin's house after I was asked to come to this church. I said to Willard, I've seen enough to know the problem, and I've got to be willing to pick up a cross that I don't want to pick up because it's painful. There's no way that the blight can be removed, though I didn't use those words, without being willing to die in the process if necessary. Faith Center's got problems. That's why I have consistently in front of the camera said, we're going to tell it the way it is. Sure, we have problems. But the good hand of our God is on us. And greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world. Put flesh and blood on this fella. He came to town with few men and one beast and spent 3 days and in the night, probably with threat on his life. At that point, the walls were down, the gates were burned. Looking at the mess, I don't find any record where God even did for him what he did for Joshua. No man standing there with his sword drawn. No revelation in the night. He doesn't come back with any special revelation. He just surveyed the mess. Then said I to them, after that, you see the distress that we're in? Faith Center, and all you that listen, ye see the distress that we're in. You may say, well, I want to go to a church where they tell me good things all the time. We'll get around to that. But the walls are down. God must speak to a people that will respond to the truth. I just wonder if he looked out at them with a great big old smile and said, you see the distress we're in? That's what I call the smiley goonie bird Christianity. Everything's beautiful. Come to Jesus and heaven starts tomorrow. Small wonder there's so many disillusioned ex-saints running around. Tell it the way it is. Ye see the distress that we're in. How Jerusalem lieth waste and the gates thereof are burned with fire. Let's get out of this miserable place and find a city we can shout and jump around in. You see the distress that we're in. Come, let us build up the wall of Jerusalem. Why? That we be no more. Or let me be silly some more. Let's build up the wall so we can have a good time therein. And we got that in your Bible. I don't know what he said. Let us build up the wall of Jerusalem. Say it with me. That we be no more a reproach. Say it again. Let us build up the wall of Jerusalem that we be no more a reproach.
No, we are not in distress now. And a lot of people are coming to the result of God blessing and the fights of faith that brought Faith Center from the distress. We're not in distress. But God's distressed about the fact that, like the Ephesian church, we've lost our first love. The need now is to keep us from becoming a reproach. What kind of reproach will it be on God if, having seized that territory and done the unbelievable, paid cash much more than the debt that was on the church in the distress time, raised our flag, lifted those signs, bought that building and said, "This is God's"? And we fail? What kind of reproach will that be? Then, let's remove the reproach. Now, let's make sure we don't become a reproach. God has blessed this ministry and brought us to this time. And those that have lost their first love have either got to get it back or get out. And God's got to give us a body that are going to move on. Go back to the message.
Say it with me. That we be no more a reproach.
Say it with me. That we do not become a reproach. Go back to it.
Say it with me. That we be no more a reproach.
See, this is about God. He bought us with His own blood. We are not our own. Thank God for His blessings. We better start trusting God, the giver of gifts, and prove our gratitude to Him, lest we become a reproach. It's criminal that after 30 years now, only 146 people have committed to be one of the 300 I'm reaching for who will commit 12 hours of their life every week, that we accomplish what God sent us down there to do. We've become a great organization. Even this place in King's House 1 was beginning to be a place of reproach. Secret 16 has changed that. And Secret 16 is in process this year. Let us not become a reproach. Give me a band that will bear the burden to make us the testimony downtown and a window to the world that God took us down there to become. Now, get back to the message.
Say it again. Let us build up the wall of Jerusalem that we be no more a reproach.
Oh, let's build Faith Center so it'll have a youth program, take care of our kids. Let's build Faith Center so we men can get involved in things. Let's build Faith Center so we women can have a good time, our little sowing bees. Let's get ourselves a choir because we need an outlet for our energies and ministry.
When I came here, they had a choir and fancy robes until the first Sunday I saw two or three of them sleeping while I was preaching. And there had never been a choir since. The robes have rotted away. Get on the telephone. Don't get on the telephone. We're not ready yet. Get back to that message.
Let's build Faith Center that we be no more a reproach. Well, circle a word there, will you? How in the world did the "we" get in that? He didn't say that it be no more a reproach. I never preach to congregations without putting Gene Scott front and center. This book's been speaking to me in the practical needs of staying clean, clear from any kind of indictments. I'm a realist in the legal and governmental world. I have looked cameras dead in the eye and said, my hands are cleaner than the corporate commissioner. And I walk a tightrope. The corporate commissioner knew what was going on at Faith Center when there's over $1 million cash around. Did nothing. If they start treading on my toes, I'm going to accuse malfeasance or nonfeasance, if you want the legal term. My hands are cleaner than theirs. Why didn't they do something? I came after the fact. So I'll ring that bell, and so to cleanse their hands, they get extra feasance and meddle around so much I can't even clean up the mess. So it's a tightrope you have to walk. And in the necessity of keeping my hands free to do the curative work, I have said over and over again, I didn't create the problem. But this book's been speaking to me. Neither did Nehemiah create the problem. And Gene Scott will never preach without responding to the word the same as he expects the people who hear it. This book is preaching to us. And all my life I've said, God, will you make your word flow in such a way that the preacher just is a funnel, they see through him to the word. Nehemiah didn't tear these walls down. I did some additional calculation, correcting my curbstone calculations of last Sunday. He'd have had to been more than 100 years old to have had anything to do with the problems that brought the walls down at Jerusalem. Yet he said, same is true of those he was motivating to build. Ezra had come. Before that, Zerubbabel and Joshua, when they quit working under Zerubbabel and Joshua, and then begin to quit working before Ezra came on the scene, Haggai gets up and says, how many are left that even remember this last temple? They shouted when the foundation was laid under Zerubbabel. But enough years had gone by, even those had died until everyone around when Nehemiah came had nothing to do with the sins that brought the cave in. Yet he says, let us build. Let me read it again. He doesn't say, let us build up the wall of Jerusalem, that it be no more a reproach. Say it with me. Let us build up the wall that we be no more a reproach. Why didn't he prophesy to them, folks? Why didn't he put verse 18 in front of verse 17? Isn't that the way we'd do it in modern revivals? This is the way the modern preacher would do it if he's like many that I know. He'd got 18 in front. He said, I told them of the hand of my God which was good upon me, and also the king's words that he had spoken unto me. And then I would say, you see the distress after I've given that good news, and let's rise up and build. Why didn't this prophet prophesy to them about what God had told him before he laid on them responsibility? Learn from it, folks. The motivation had to be a coming under and a personal assuming of the burden of God's integrity. Why? I repeat what I said last week. Why did God choose Elijah to lead revival under the days of idol worship when Ahab and Jezebel reigned supreme? Because he cared. You learn in the New Testament he prayed earnestly that it wouldn't rain over in the desert.
he prays. You can go back to Deuteronomy chapter 11. You'll find God had said it wasn't going to rain. He'd shut up the heavens if they worshipped idols. Joshua cared more about, or rather, Elijah cared more about God's honor than his own well-being. Before he said a word about what the Lord had told him, before he established his reputation as the voice of God, he laid the facts on them. You see the distress that we're in. Let us build up the wall of Jerusalem, that we be no more a reproach. Then's always the but, the then, the and, the conjunctions, those leading words, always, or not by accident in God's book. Then, after that 17th verse, I told them of the hand of my God which was good upon me, as also the king's words that he had spoken unto me. Now here's what he started. The burden he carried, God's work was in danger of reproach. The blessing he coveted, send me that I may build it, an opportunity to be a part. Lots of you watching on television need to be here, and you know it. Not enough just to watch. He wanted to be a part of the building. The blight he surveyed, it was bad. Worse than what we face. Faith Center's not as bad off as Jerusalem was. Glory to God. Here's the building he started. And they said, let us rise up and build. Let us rise up and build. God's man, the prophet, brought forth the response. Let us rise up and build. So they strengthened their hands for this good work. Can you say it today? And this is all the altar call I need, if you'll say it. Let us rise up and build. Can you say it? Let us rise up and build.
Well, that was the message in 1977. I showed last night pictures of the great churches that used to occupy the heart of the city. They all fled. All of them. Traffic problems, land values, congestion, parking. They all fled. Just as I came here 29 years ago and every person said I was crazy. There's no hopes of saving Faith Center. And they didn't care. I cared. Didn't need it, but I cared. We're trying the impossible again. No Protestant church in the heart of the city has been able to maintain. Dwindling population, former giant sanctuaries with a handful of people. We're trying the impossible. Now, I said, if we had filled Hope Street, we'd have both places. We'd own the high rise, and it would fund the other church. We'll have to rise up and build the sanctuary. We own it. We bought it. I still marvel that they borrowed money that they shouldn't have borrowed for the Lord's work and still left a mortgage on the church. That surprised me when I came to town. Didn't even pay the mortgage off while they spent the money in operating. We don't owe a dime on the cathedral. We bought it. Let's rise up and build our presence in that city. Free my hands and my wife's hands for ministry by coming and being Aaron and Hur, and give me volunteers that can do the work. Say it with me sitting at home. Let us rise up and build this congregation and this base in the city and this ministry worldwide, and put our hands to the blessed opportunity of being a part of it. Now the phones are opening up. Get on the telephone. We're going right back to music. I've been talking. Scott on Scott. Two Scott's been talking tonight. Same ones. I'm going to read some messages. I'm one of the 300. My reservations are in, and I am going to keep my commitments. I'm 16 years old. From DeVore, Deborah Heller. Deborah's doing very well. She had a restful night, has no fever. She is responding to touch and voice when she wakes up, which is more often now, and her eyes are very coordinated together. She tries to focus on the person talking to her. She has many facial movements and is moving her fingers and toes. Her vasospasms are mild to moderate now. With his stripes, we are healed. Jerry Heller calling in. But he's being faithful to his commitments. Don't you like to know that? Gardena, prayer request earlier in the day. Thank you, Pastor, for letting me know you got my prayer request. I took a break after festival and called Eddie to let him know you got the prayer request and that you're praying for him. And he says, thank you. I could hear him sigh of relief over the phone after I told him the message. And he's in the hospital. I don't miss your prayer requests. Texas, Channel 27. Thank you, Gene Scott, for filling the void here on Sundays and for all of the study and work so that he's able to give out this amazing teaching. I know God is enlightening him. I miss the services of my church because they interfere with listening to Dr. Scott. Thank God for Dr. Scott. Get on the telephone. Tonight, my wife walked through some sections of this building in King's House 1 that I hadn't been in for a long time, having trusted staff members to take care of it, and began to cry. She had the same reaction that I had 29 years ago. Faith Center resurrected. It's got to be kept that way. And we've expanded now. Those that say, well, Faith Center died, didn't it? No. That fountain of faith now stands as a realization rather than a statement of faith, which is the substance of things hoped for. Faith Center is the substance of that which was hoped for and became. And thank God for my wife who determined to make it better than it ever was. At the same time, we're seizing the territory downtown. You're going to come in one of these days and find that the bleachers are gone, as much as they create a certain nostalgia. And you're going to come in one of these days and find that the old pews are gone and they'll be housing a branch that people will be sitting on at another place. And we will have the equivalent of a religious broadcast studio. There won't be any You'll have to fight to get in because there will only be 300 seats. Maybe the volunteers will be the only ones that get to go there. 300 seats. We, last year at Secret 16, determined that before we progressed on in the city, we would shore up and perpetuate and solidify every single aspect of this ministry and begin a process of selling everything that didn't make some kind of direct contribution to what I'm called to do. And as Jesus came down from the Mount of Transfiguration and steadfastly set his face to go to Jerusalem, I with my wife steadfastly set our face that my ministry is not coming to an end, it's just beginning.
Yes, sir.
And get on the telephone.
Noise with the pots and the pan. I believe it's in my soul, you're the devil in nylon hose. I believe it's in my soul, you're the devil in nylon hose.
The phone number to call is 1-800-338-3030. That's 1-800-338-3030.
I said shake, rattle and roll. I said shake, rattle and roll.
Dr. Scott teaches every Sunday morning in the Los Angeles University Cathedral at 933 South Broadway between 9th and Olympic in the heart of downtown Los Angeles. The service starts at 11 a.m. and passes are required. Call and make reservations to 1-800-338-3030. That's 1-800-338-3030.
Now, you unsophisticated ones might look at this old pedestal here. Get a camera, one of your handhelds, turn, stand over here with a piano and take a picture of camera one. Look at that old pedestal. Turn it up. See that old pedestal? Now, you that have been around a long time and you see that pedestal move around, it'd take you $15,000 to buy one of those kind of pedestals if you could find one. Modern things are these things you got to worry about knocking a $5, $10, $20,000 camera off. That old pedestal. Now, you may think, well, that's the same one that's been here. And I'm proud of the fact that when I came to town, the engineers told me the cameras had 7 years, and there were already 4 years on them, so we had to buy new ones. Well, 27 years later, as part of Secret 16, I turned my wife loose to buy cameras. But we saved that pedestal because you can't get those kind of pedestals. That camera on top, go to the camera. That's a new camera. So just don't think that's the same old thing. A lot of you have taken for granted. Look at the front of these. Do you remember when the ragged cloth was in front of these areas? Get that picture where it says University Network across the front of that. Look around in here. We had a terrible rainstorm today. How many people know that? I mean, it was a gully washer. A year ago, you would have come in here, been dodging buckets and worrying about slipping on the water. Every piece of property, every house, a lot of you don't even know about Laurel Avenue and the old bookstore that has been gutted and is being put together again so you can get to an active bookstore that is nigh to King's House 1 when we have a service there. The duplex and the houses down Laurel, they've all been, save one, still one to finish. Everything roofed, this roofed, King's House 1 roofed, Secret 1 roofed, the cathedral roofed. That was a piece of change. I calculated somewhere between $400,000 and $500,000 in just re-roofing all of the properties, north, south, and here. Refurbishing. All that's been going on behind the scenes. As we're saying to the devil, you may have thought that the old man was running out, but God gave him a new life, and I'll celebrate my fourth birthday come October 5th of this year. And we're just getting started, folks. And let us rise up and keep building. Come on, get on the phone. Our volunteers will be halfway there. 12 hours a week. I said Romans would separate this church. And like I told you many times, George Worth, the old scion of the charter member of the church in Oroville that I first removed from his Sunday school post and then was the man who gave the $100,000 that brought me out of the valley. He said to me, Doc, when you preach, they either got to get with it or get out. That's what's happening. Faith in the blood, faith in the reality, you're not your own, and God has priority, and you put Him first, and then He takes care of you. There's a message that a lot of you think you've graduated from. Well, I did my term. I'm retired now. No, the more mature the saint, the tougher the test. And some of you don't want to face the truth. Well, I helped bring us here. Well, you get no credit in heaven if you don't keep us here. Now, get on the phone. I want to read you some more messages from Dallas. You know, we have taken giant steps of faith. You may say, well, why didn't you maintain all those things? You realize that the budget has nothing to do with replacing equipment, maintaining major maintenance. Ordinary maintenance, fine, but like new roofs. Look up at these tile. Volunteers put those new tiles up there. And as bad a rainstorm as I can remember having for the hours today that it poured, you don't see any leaks. Now, the roofers had to come back about three times because when you do business with my wife, you're going to do it right. Now, I've told you, when she managed 300 and some stores for a Jewish family across Canada, you knew that for a Jewish department store owner, you learn how to do business. Yeah, most of you don't even know. $100,000 used to be, I remember when we paid $200,000 for 4 hours on satellite. $100,000 plus every month for GE3, transponder 20. Right under $30,000 every month. for the KU band satellite. Do you have any idea what the power bills are for this entire organization? The power bills for the cathedral? The budget is eaten up with maintaining the ministry. You know how much we spend to keep, not what we paid to buy the monstrous broadcast entity that is the biggest in shortwave in Latin America. Every month we have to send money to fund the full operation. We get no money. We don't sell time. We're not on shortwave in the third world countries because of the money that's going to come in. They're not going to send money when they gather around a shortwave in a refugee camp in Liberia. They're not sending money from Latin America. If they do, they send pesos, and by the time the bank charges its conversions, it's all gone anyway. Do you have any idea how much money to keep FM, 2 AMs, and shortwave in Anguilla? Right under $50,000 a month, every month for all these years, Nashville. You know how much it costs to keep just keeping the ministry out? You can imagine the leaps of faith we've taken, $8,000 a day for Channel 56. Do you think the time on Channel 4 in San Francisco is free, a V station? Channel 5, a V station in Washington, D.C.? Channel 27, a Fox-owned station in Dallas? On I can go. And starting this Sunday, we'll be on an hour every night on Channel 4, Monday through Friday, in San Francisco. All I have to do is read the messages. This is adding stars to your crown. We don't ever... You know what we play in Dallas? In contrast to everyone else. You ever seen... The hour of power leaders sit down and tell you how much they need to make it. There's a telethon going on TBN right now. Melissa sings. I teach for about 53 minutes in an edited down message. And Melissa sings the closing song. The closest thing to any kind of appeal is a phone number. We don't even mention money. Unless it's teaching on giving as part of a message, which hasn't happened yet because we haven't played that series in Dallas. Look at the response. Madonna, Texas, calling to let Dr. Scott know that I thoroughly enjoyed his sermon and I love the lady who sang She's Great. I believe was the song... And it truly touched my heart. Fort Worth, Texas, he has the best program on television. Out of all of them, he's the greatest I ever heard. I watch every week. Athens, Texas, he's so good I just love watching him. I would like a copy of the free magazine and the tape list. This is my first time calling. It takes about a year in a city before the word grips their hearts and they start responding because of the word and giving. And then the station will become self-supporting and contribute to the ministry. These are steps of faith that we are taking all the time. It takes the secrets for last year and this year to do what we're doing. And I've told you some of it, just showed you in part. All the roofs is one. Look around here. I just asked my wife to take a little handheld camera. I don't know how it's going to turn out. I'd show you a couple of things. I don't know which one will come first. But I drove in the garage and grieved. We still have and are attempting to sell it. We still have the transmitters and everything from Channel 38 in San Francisco. And the antenna is still in the basement of the mausoleum in Berkeley. And we're offering to sell it to some foreign organization or give it away, whichever we do. But it occupies half the garage. The other side was a junk room for the old guard for the last 20, 30 years. My wife couldn't stand it. So she turned, she's working on the second layer, but she turned the upper loft into a study for me so I can pull in and get there in the afternoon and be ready for festival. These offices back here had tile and roof coming down, mold and dirt and junk. I said, take your camera and just do a quick scan of some parts of this building they haven't seen, so let it roll. I don't even know how it'll turn out in this little handheld. That's one of the offices upstairs. Sparkling clean. As it turns, that might be my office back here that they've set up for me, but I don't think so. That's an upstairs office. That's what it is. You saw some of that early California stuff in the hall as the hall's been redone. That's the entrance way that used to be a disgrace. The doors were closed. All redone. Completely. Painted, polished, mold removed, track lights installed. A working space now, as we have the volunteers that have to coordinate and begin to keep track of the scheduling that's necessary for all of these volunteers. I wish you had seen these offices. Talk about the refuse and the mess that Nehemiah looked at. I wish you'd seen these offices before Mrs. Scott decided enough already. And the old guard that I lamented, they worked in the mess. They didn't care. They didn't even raise their hand and say, it's leaking up here. They just put a bucket down and moved sideways. That's down the stairs, so you can recognize this. That's the second floor as you come in. Maybe you notice the security cameras outside the new windows and new doors as you come in off the street. And several of you have commented on the door that leads into the hallway and the new facilities for the communion elements. That's looking down into the entrance area. And you can walk by and not even notice in the end of the hall out. This is the stairway up into. All that's been spruced up and done. This is God's house. Security cameras, monitors. The next guy that tries to do graffiti scratching on the windows is going to discover there's a hidden covering over the windows, and he's going to be recorded on camera. Now we're down in the foyer area where you come in. You go down that hallway to my office, which used to be Dave Lawrence's office, been totally redone. I think that's my office that she's finished with all the computer facilities, and the books that I would use in that office are not yet there. That was Dave Lawrence's office, and it looked like an outside toilet. I haven't told you all the things that Secret 16 accomplished and will continue to accomplish with real attention on King's House 1 right now. But that's my wedding pictures in my office. She should have zoomed in close because that was the happiest looking woman and man you ever saw. You need to come to be a voice of faith and see what's happening is we be no more a reproach. This is God's house. King's House 1, Faith Center is God's house. The cathedral downtown is the display case for the word as it goes out on Sunday. And a finger in the eye of the devil as we turn that tower. I'll take a camera and show you the prayer tower as we work from the top down. A fortune to retrofit and meet the fire safety codes. That's the door that has Ephesians, "We wrestle not against flesh and blood, and principalities and power." You go through that door, and engraved in it is the fountain of faith, if you've noticed. Right around the corner, two Euro caves to keep the wine for the menorah. I want you to see my loft. We'll get there. That's the communion area. And underneath are the two Euro caves to keep the wine at a proper temperature. God deserves the best.
Yes,
walk through here and say, "I'm a part of this. It belongs to God, and I belong to God, and I coveted the blessing of being a part of it." You have no idea what's been done in the computer room to organize for the first time, though I've pled for it for many years. That's the computer banks for 24-hour transcribing of my messages. The tapes organized as they've never been organized, and for the first time, though I've cried for it for the last 20-some years, 3 copies on the shelf of every single one of the tapes that we offer. A sitting area outside in the hall where they can wait for the proper time to come in and view on the plasma TV what you're seeing right now on television. When she was in there filming it a few minutes ago, we had a picture of the Fountain of Faith on television. She just walked through and made these pictures a few minutes ago. But I'm waiting to go out in the garage. And that's, remember they had that painting of me up there? I said, "Put that cross up there. Move that painting into the archives." Don't you see a difference in what is behind that curtain? One never knows, does one? I'm in the garage going up the stairs to the loft. It used to be a junk room beyond belief. Neither Nehemiah nor his beast could have gotten through. That's, look at, and personally she bought $18,000 worth of books, duplicating the key books that I study from so I don't have to bring them here. I drive in, get out of the car, and that's my study loft. And all the furniture is not yet in place, but amazing what a little paint and some proper treatment of the floor in this old antique building is shaped up. That's my loft. Right down below is my car, and that's a new soundboard, absolutely new. I mean, these electronic pieces of equipment cost fortunes. Just a small part of Secret 16 last year, and we're just going at full tilt this year, and that finishes the quick little run that she took with the camera. You didn't know all that, did you? You didn't know all of it, did you? Now, get on the telephone. Let us rise up and keep building. Come on. Send some more calls from Dallas. More stars in your crown. Dallas, watching Channel 27 Sunday morning. My name is Betty. I watch Channel 27. I find Dr. Scott very interesting. I very much appreciate his teaching. I know some of the languages he writes. He's very knowledgeable. Please send me whatever you can. Dallas, I enjoyed the program and the teaching. It was also nice to hear Mrs. Scott singing. Stephenville or Stephenville, Texas. I'm beginning to understand things I didn't understand before. Plano, Texas, watching this show and is amazed. A month of watching. He makes it plain and understanding. She loves his teaching and will continue to watch and listen. DeSoto, Texas. I used to watch from time to time, but now I find myself watching regularly. Well, if you got the receiver, you're going to pick up the antenna. Get on telephone! I read from Dallas. Let me read from Washington, D.C., our capital. Atlanta, Maryland. Dr. Scott, your wife seems beautiful. Pierceville, Virginia. I get up early to watch. I'm a linguist, and it's incredible that Dr. Scott has learned all these languages. District Heights, Missouri. Thank you for the teaching, and I sure would like to get the pulpit. Laurel, Maryland. I like the pulpit that was on the screen. He's obviously brilliant. Must have an IQ of 180. Well, my wife's got 186. Washington, D.C., I turned on this. That's true. I turned on this program this morning. Where can I get a copy of the teaching? Send me some literature. Dr. Scott's preaching's amazing. Dundalk, Maryland. Great. Cock Capone, West Virginia. I just started to watch this program. It's wonderful. Sykesville, Maryland. Some of these towns I didn't even know. I'm calling to get a copy of the pulpit. I love the teaching. I've been watching for several months, somewhere in Delaware. This teaching is wonderful. Northwest Washington, D.C. Thank you for the teaching. Washington, D.C., I think the program's terrific. Where's your church? Downtown Los Angeles. Heart of the city. Gettysburg, Maryland. Thank you for the teaching. I'd like to order a copy of the program. Laurel, Maryland. Maryland, I just woke up and turned on the TV, and there he was. I enjoyed this program. I'd like the pulpit. Dr. Scott's teaching, Alexandra's changing my life. Bowie, Maryland. I'm enjoying the program very much. I watch on Channel 5 every Sunday. Sunland, Maryland. I'd like a tape and book list. We're reaching the world, folks. You know, all these pseudo-plagiarizing copyists are being influenced. At least I'm correcting the bad doctrine of a lot of these people, even though they don't want to give credit for their change. Claire Grace's prophecy is being fulfilled. The tangents that are just blissfully ignorant are responding and correcting the path. God raised us up for a unique ministry, teaching. In fact, I don't even hear anybody refer to me anymore as a TV evangelist. We at least have crossed that hurdle. They don't even call me a preacher. They call me a teacher. And you're the Aaron and hers, so you got 5 more minutes of lifetime before we go on 56. Use it. Get on the telephone.